Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hi folks, I'm Jack Kennedy and welcome once again to Farm Tech Talk, the livestock show. Thanks to Grass & Agro once again for helping us make this show happen. Mixed bag of weather again this week, it's fair to say. This week I'm joined by Adam Woods, Darren Carty and Aidan Brennan. First up, it's the quickfire round. Remember, email your questions to farmtechtalk@farmersjournal.ie or WhatsApp 086-836-6465. Adam, one quickfire in here for you. Question for Adam. Have heifers about 550 to 570, traditional breeds, some could be hung up, but also some would carry more weight. I'm getting a bit anxious that factories could drop price like last year. Would you feed on or pull the plug on them? Up to 570 kilos, Adam, traditional Hereford or Black.
Yeah, they're probably coming close, Jack, but I think it'd feed on at the minute for another couple of weeks. Anyway, even 2-3 weeks, I'd only take the chance because I think this thing will turn based on numbers. Numbers are going to get tight, I think, and factories are just pulling back to get going again, if you know what I mean. They'll pull back maybe 10 cents. So that's 2 weeks in terms of 5 cent raises when it starts to go again. So I'd be happy enough to feed on for another couple of weeks there. Yep.
Yeah. Good man. Like any good factory agent, I'll feed them on for another while. Yeah. Darren, here we go on two quick fires for you on the sheep side. Love the show. You answered a question on the ARF vaccine a few weeks ago. Any updates since on if a vaccine will be available soon? Talk to me, Darren.
Yeah, so we actually got an update on that this week. So MST, it's a bit of history behind it. MST used to manufacture that vaccine, which was traded as Scabivax. They no longer do that, but Zoetis are manufacturing the vaccine, which is going to be called Scabigard. It's essentially the same thing. They said to me that they have supply gone out to, say, on the way to wholesalers and to vets this week, and it should be available to buy next week.
Okay. Spot on. So it's on the way. I was interested to read Darren advising farmers to draft off your hoggets last week. Will it have long-term effect on your numbers? Darren, we were touched off this again last week in the Farm Tech Talk in terms of price, and we'll come to it in terms of hoggets, what they're making. Potentially we'll have less yos around for the ram next autumn. Talk to me.
Yes, exactly, Jack. Look, it could have implications. I suppose just maybe not to confuse it, that what I was saying is to pick off the lower quality as opposed to picking off, say, any your hoggets. Yeah.
Okay. No sense of a backtrack there. No. Okay. So you're just clarifying that you were talking about the poorer quality hoggets. Like, yeah.
Exactly. Yes, exactly. And look, it's still like, if you look at Jack hoggets making 180 euros, some of them might make it in the back end. So you have to do your sums on it.
Nice one. We'll chat a bit more about it in a minute. Aidan, two quick fires in here for you. I'm struggling to get cows out to grass, even for a few hours daily on off grazing. What level of meal would you want to be feeding with pretty good high quality silage, mid 70 DMD at this stage? And with the forecast mixed or very poor for next week, it could be like this for the next 10 days to 2 weeks. The question was, what level of meal would you want? So there's a bit of silage going in, Aidan. There's a bit of grass going in every now and again. And he's looking at a bad 10 days. Like, yeah.
Yeah, so he doesn't think grass is going to be coming in the next 10 days, we'll say. And look at the forecast, you know, it is mixed and there's a lot of rain coming. So it will be challenging, especially on heavier farms, Jack, that are exceptionally wet now because we've had so much rain. So I suppose, look, to answer the question, Jack, if I was a nutritionist, I'd be saying, you know, and maybe if I was aligned to a feed mill or something, I might be saying, geez, you wouldn't be going 7, 8, 9 kilos of nuts along with that good quality silage in order to fulfill the nutritional requirements of the cow. Now, Jack, there's no economic response to doing that, in my book anyway, no matter what type of cow you have, particularly not for the typical average Irish high EBI dairy cow. So really, I mean, you're talking about something 4 or 5, maybe maximum 6 kilos of nuts on that kind of a winter diet with decent quality silage and no grass in the diet. And as soon as cows get any bit of grass at all, you can probably get half that to 3 or 4 kilos straight away. So play it on a day-by-day basis would be my view on it, and feed the nuts when you have to, but cut them back as soon as you can. And I mean, there's like, yes, okay, the cows would need more because the protein in the silage is so low, but like, it just, there's no response to it.
Okay, so short term, go with that. As you say, up to 6 kilos, 3 and 3, probably more than an evening, and take it from there. Second question, Aidan, I'm looking at beet as an option to conserve silage and up the energy content of diet for dairy cows. Calve from mid-January, they're losing a bit more condition than I'd like, not getting to grass. Would there be a big adjustment in the diet if I include it, or am I better to up the concentrate feed levels instead? Beet as an option to, instead of, to replace feed, concentrate feed, Aidan, yeah.
Yeah, it's a good question, Jack. And it goes back, you know, those cows are calved since mid-January. We had this discussion before, the early calving. The hassle is that if you get a wet March, you know, you're hitting peak production and those cows aren't getting the grass because the weather is poor. So it puts the emphasis back on calving date. But, I mean, look, beet is an exceptionally good feed. It's very high in energy. Cows and cattle really like it when they get it. The big problem with beet is that it's so low in protein. You're talking about 6 to 8% crude protein level in beet, whereas the diet should be around 14, 15 or 16% crude protein. So you have to put in an awful lot more protein in order to balance that if you're feeding beet. And that's the problem. Beet is a great feed, Jack, if you're putting in grass in the diet as well. Do you know? So it really works well with grass, but there's no grass in the diet. It's a big problem because it's actually decreasing the crude protein in the overall diet. So I'd be wary of it. The other big problem with beet is you have to buy it in a load, you know, a 20-ton load or whatever it is. And you know, you're probably in a short-term problem now in terms of grass. Let's say the weather changes tomorrow. I know it's not going to, but let's say it does. You still have 18 or 19 ton of beet in the air that you don't really need because there's loads of grass out the fields. Yes, you're going to have to feed it. That reduces grass utilization and so on and so forth. Now, look, it's early in the spring yet. You know, there's plenty of road to run yet before we get out into April or May. But it's a consideration, I suppose, if you're locking yourself into buying tonnages. Just be careful because you might need it all. But for me, it's a tricky one to feed as well. You need to chop it. It needs to be washed. It's an extra job. Go back to the first quickfire question, you know, feeding the 6 or 7 kilos of nuts. It might be an easier option. At least the nuts will hold in the bin. Look, it depends on how well set up you are for it as well. But it will conserve silage, that's for sure. But silage is available as well, Jack, I'd say. You know, there's, you could, and look, maybe beet is a better buy than silage if you are having to buy feed because it, you know, it's going to be better quality, whereas no, silage is mixed.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I'm kind of going around the circles answering this one, Jack. But for me, it depends on the system, depends on the farm. I'd be slow to recommend it for everyone, put it that way.
I'm hearing more challenges to beat than more positives. Leave it at that. We'll chat again later on in the show, Aidan, on some of that stuff. Adam, before I forget, Tullamore Farm, how's the calving going? Any out of grass yet?
No, nothing. Out. No, we're using the new creep area. In fairness, he's pretty blessed with that new shed and the straw bed behind the slats is working really well for those early cows and calves. They're going pretty good. We're down two. He's 30 odd calved. One with an intestinal issue. Actually, we sent the calf to Athlone and it was something wasn't joined up along the way. And the second one we just lost a calf. And so look at 6%, I suppose, of 30 odd, just below 6%. I suppose we would have cruised around that 5-6% for the last number of years. So we'd probably like it to be a little bit lower, but you'd always have losses.
Is a calf and having 30 calves, is that enough, Adam, for this time?
Maybe a little bit slower than we would like in March. I think he has 40 due to calf now in March, but you probably would have liked 40 calving in February and maybe 30 in March, and then whatever 20 maybe into April or that, or maybe even try and cut them April calves out altogether. So a little bit slower, but look, once it's going okay, and the fact the weather isn't being kind to us down there as regards getting cattle out, it's probably maybe all the better.
Yeah, did you make a call on the bulls yet?
No, we're still have the calculator out, and we're still
accepting phone calls.
That's it. We weren't happy with what we were getting. We went to Tullamore with a few of them, and we were sort of around 270, 280 a kilo. Just whether we hit it on a bad night, I don't know, but we would have liked €3 a kilo or above it probably. We're hearing those bulls being bought for export, maybe up north of €3 even being paid for those heavy bulls. So we definitely weren't good there at sort of 500 kilos. Of that 280 mark, so we'll see. I suppose we're sort of weighing it up, Jack, since, and we're sort of thinking the very heavy ones, are we better go on to finish with them, and maybe the lighter ones, which are going to cost a lot more to finish, maybe they should go. Like, we went with our heaviest, probably best bulls, but maybe it's the more story bulls should be going to market, and we'll in the next, I'd say, week, we'll have to call that.
Okay, here's an easier one for you, the ICBF debacle. Are we any closer to a solution?
I don't think so, Jack. No, another meeting, like a 6-7 hour meeting last Thursday, and they actually held them in the room down there. There was calls to get out for lunch, but there was no getting out for lunch. They sweated it out during that time. And the big things, I suppose, going back, and look, we've talked about this before, probably the cow weight, right? There's a bit of a resolution there, 450 kilos. Is the baseline now, so it's the very lightweight is going to be out of it. But there's another question now coming on the heavyweight. So ICBF are sort of saying, well, what do we do with the heavy cows? So they're going back to look at that, to the TAG, the Technical Advisory Group. The weanland systems and the weanland prices, that's coming up again and again and again from farm organisations. We have this on the beef page this week and a couple of comments from farm orgs on what they think. The extensive models, we talked about this, the low-cost model, you know, in Paul Crossan's model, there's a lot of fertilizer, 120 kilos been organic again, being spread, people are saying, you know, what about an extensive model and a low stocking rate? How does that fit into that? So that has to be looked at as well. Carbon, a lot of people saying carbon should be out. I'm not too sure that's going to work. And then the last one is SCEP, and I suppose SCEP is getting really, really confusing now with SCEP. I suppose there's been leeway given to females, there's been leeway given to AI bulls. Now the last hurdle is stock bulls, pedigree stock bulls. And there's a big sort of a showdown there as regards with pedigree breed societies, as regards farmers who would have used bulls, pedigree breeders used bulls last summer to breed cows that are hitting the ground now in good faith that they were going to be 4 or 5 star. They're not, and they want them to go back to an old index. So really and truly, we've a couple of scenarios now who are going back to old indexes. It's getting very, very confusing with everything. But so in a nutshell, they went to the minister last Thursday to get a resolution to that pedigree issue. Minister hasn't come back, and we'll see this one to see. Basically, this will determine whether another meeting takes place or not.
All to play for still in that, by the sounds of things. Excellent. the one piece of news this week, I suppose, that stood out for me was the winter finishers piece, and obviously we've talked about it before, Adam, in terms of big prices paid in the autumn for stores, and those cattle now coming to the market, and maybe a little bit of a squeeze coming on price. You've numbers there in terms of, you know, the losses that some of these operators are making.
It's not good, Jack. And look at its factories using maybe cow slaughter runs to capitalise on a supply and demand issue. You know, the cow kill is up 1,200, and that's probably finishing manufacturing contracts for them. And they're seeing an opportunity there to pull beef. I'd say personally that it's pulling it back to get going back up again. So you take it, if beef never goes up any more than 5 cents a week. It can take a drop of maybe 5 or 10 cents a week, but it'll never go back up more than 5 cents a week. So if they take beef back 15 cents over the last sort of 3-4 weeks and a week ahead, that's 3 weeks they're getting back to zero again, you know, in terms of a price rise in the spring. And I genuinely think that's what's happening at the moment. Talking to agents on the ground, cattle numbers are very, very tight. I don't think. But getting back to the winter finisher, this the mind boggles with this one, because you know, Marpid's analysis showed €3 a kilo, north of €3 a kilo, was being paid for 500 kilo stores. They went in October in on silage into 6-7 kilo, 8 kilos a meal, and coming out now in March, we're saying 6-18 a kilo if you add in €100 to cover labour and margin. That R plus bullock tomorrow is 5.36. So again, no more than us and Tullamore Farm getting out the calculator, it's not hard to do it. 82 yeah. cent of a difference, and multiply that by 400 kilos, you know, yeah. you're up there 250 ahead. So it's I don't know how people can square that.
And, but is it not, they're not, Adam? Is it fair?
No,
to
I suppose look
not,
at a lot of feedlots, Jack, and contracts and all this crack going on that are they're on those sweeteners and 20, 30, 40 cent probably in some cases. And that's what keeps the thing going. But the sad thing about it is that the wee farmer with the two and three bullocks going in tomorrow, he's paying for that, you know?
So it relates to the Tullamore piece, like, so for small suckler farmers, the majority of them are in that bracket, you know, right, whatever, less than 20 cows, give or take. They want to sell a few Wainlands rather than hold on to them, Adam, to finish them. Like, given the prices that we're looking at now, and you talked about €3 a kilo. Okay, maybe we talked about €4 a kilo a couple of weeks ago, but let's say €3 on average for that Charlie type Wainland, like coming now to 450, 500 kilos, maybe a little bit less. Yeah, maybe 450 is at the top, I'll say. I mean, Is it move out now?
Yeah, absolutely, Jack. Absolutely, yeah, 100%. It's definitely move out. I suppose Tullamore's a little bit different in that we're not going a completely terminal. If you good Charlie calves or good Limousin calves, the terminal calves and good shapy calves, that there's only one route for them, and that's out. Absolutely, and plus you've the exporter driving that as well in terms of for some of those top calves and some of those middling calves. It's funny, somebody said to me this week, you know, there's a lot of value placed on the suckler cow all outside Ireland, but in Ireland there's very little value placed on the suckler cow. Turkey's looking for suckler Wainlands, Morocco's looking for suckler Wainlands, you know, all that, those countries are looking for suckler bred stock.
If nothing else, you have to go for it. Like, but live exports are positive, Adam. There's still good news coming in on the live exports.
Absolutely. We have a new ship. I haven't seen this ship docked before. There's a new ship docked in Greenore today, actually been loaded with hay and meal. The Shorthorn Express. Now, it's not going to be filled with shorthorns, but it's going to be filled with cattle for that sort of North African market again. So
dairy type stock.
Yeah, dairy and suckler stock, so it's a mix going in there. Those calves that left in January out to that North Africa area, very, very happy. I'm hearing back those customers, very happy. We had a couple of Irish exporters out in Turkey over the weekend trying to secure those government contracts. So I think 2024 could be a record there for live exports. The way those boats are landing and docking all over the place in Greenore and Fines and Waterford, I think it's a really, really positive story this year.
Yeah, and front end of the year anyway. Adam, calves, talk to me. I'll leave you on this now. Calves, in terms of the trade, give us a snapshot for... End of February. So these calves were born, like, you know, probably the 10th of February and just before it, maybe. So it's still early days in terms of numbers of calves coming out, I'll say. We haven't hit peak yet.
Yeah, and probably those bits of delays, maybe, and bits of issues there around sort of DNA calf registration, probably maybe delaying things a wee bit. But big numbers in Bandon on Monday, and that's always a good gauge of the trade. I'd say there's a massive gap opened up, Jack, between the very low quality calves and the real good calves. Like, and probably 50 kilos is probably your ball mark there in terms of weight. And over 50 is going really well, and under 50 is really under pressure. And you know, I've even seen Hereford and Angus calves this week down at a fiver and a tenner that were down sort of 42, 43 kilos. I think Marts are probably saying, don't come near us with those very light calves. We want stronger calves. A little bit disappointing to see CBV. Maybe I'd be a big fan of CBV, and I think it is a lot to play for beef farmers, and I'd be sort of maybe criticising the thing a wee bit, seeing maybe, you know, high value CBV calves being sold for small money. You know, if dairy farmers see that, it'll be very hard to encourage them to use high DBI bulls to generate, we'd say, higher CBV calves. Whereas if good CBV calves go for good money, then it's easy to make that change. So
now,
hopefully,
it's early day. Could the shipper thing be kind of confusing that? As in, the shippers mightn't be as concerned on CBV as
absolutely. It's your Irish farmer, I suppose, and it's your farmer buyer should be concentrating on CBV. And it is. It's very early days. I suppose it's only up on the board. So you know, people maybe have a bad taste in their mouth from the other indexes being up on boards because they don't really correlate them. But CBV, I think, is different in terms of, I think CBV could definitely offer something to those cows. And Origin, any beef farmer out there to try and be looking at CBV when they're buying.
100%. Listen, many of your lads will be in the Acres job as well. Darren, I want to talk to you about Acres. Thanks, Adam. The money, the checks have finally landed for the Acres. Over 23,000 farmers getting paid an interim payment this week. Darren, there's plenty of happy farmers out there. Happier.
Yeah. No, there'll be some farmers that they won't be just quite in the bank account. I think that's important to say, that don't get, say, panicked if you're listening to this and the money just hasn't landed into your account. The place to check it is through your agfood.ie account, and you can see where it's showing up, but it might take a few days to process. We've seen that this year, say if you were Bank of Ireland and the department was AIB or whatever, I'm not sure what, but it could take a few days.
So guys were seeing this coming early on in the week, Darren. That's where they were seeing it. They were going into their Ag Food and see this payment due piece was coming up, was it?
Exactly. So on Wednesday it was coming in and it was actually showing up as a payment made. So it wasn't payment due, it was payment made, because essentially it has been made by the department, but say two on the system, but it might just not have say landed in your bank account.
Okay.
So that's something to be mindful of. And there is a cohort of farmers, Jack, just to say the processing of say for the scheme documents or the likes, this just haven't got paid yet. But as you say, the majority I make is there was 23,709 say paid, or that was an announcement on Wednesday, along with 19,719 before that. That brings it up to 43,428. We know that 46,000 was initially in, but I would imagine that there could be upwards of 1,000 of those that maybe would have pulled out. You always see that sort of decline in a new scheme, somebody going in first, maybe not what they thought, situations or circumstances changing at farm level, and say people just pulling out after it. So it leaves anywhere, I suppose, from about 1,500 to 2,000 yet to get an interim payment. What the minister gave a commitment is that he would hope that they would be sorted in the next 10 days. So 10 days from last Wednesday, you'd be hoping that by this day week, or definitely Monday week, that there should be movement on that.
Okay. And did I read, Darren, in terms of the I call it the balancing payments, if it's due, or maybe is it the end of June he's committed to in terms of topping up the acres?
So June for balancing, Jack, and okay. I suppose if you're looking at the balancing side of things, he's also put out a bit more, say, around that. So if you've been, just say, for example, you were in acres general, you got 4,000, and you were meant to get, just say, 4,500. The next time around, you will get your 500, say, payment. If you're only meant to get 3,500, then obviously you'll have no balance in payment coming, and there will be money clawed back at some stage for that overpayment.
In the October, probably, when the best money is being paid out. Okay. So Darren, like, I mean, look at, in fairness, like, we call it, like, I mean, he stuck to his word. He said this was going to land before the end of February. It has, obviously, it's very late, and I'd say he probably couldn't go home at the weekend if these checks didn't land, you know. And it's fair to say, I think I saw some analysis there, the majority of the money is going to the Western counties. I think is it 17,000 of the 23,000 checks being posted out were going to counties along the Western Seaboard.
Yeah, because and that tallies, Jack, with the delays in the cooperation. So if you look at, say, the cooperation payments, they're big in Mayo, Donegal, Galway, say down further down in Kerry, Sligo, Leitrim. It's all of those sort of hill areas. So that was the main sort of bottleneck, or the main delay in payments. It was concerning over 18,000 farmers. So it's easy to see how the money is sort of flowing to the West. There is still payments, or there has been payments, say, general acres payments made up to that or previous to that in the general entry route. But like for the Acres Corporation, this is the first sort of injection of money into farmers and in those areas.
Okay, nice one. That's one piece of positive news, Darren, that you have. The second real good piece of positive news is, I suppose, sheep price, and it's still going up. And I think, did I see some analysis from you that it's gone up 50 cents per kilo during the week? Like, huge rise. Like,
if we look at it, Jack, it's a significant jump. If you look over the last maybe 2 weeks, they've increased by upwards of over a kilo. So, like, a real rapid increase. But it's all been driven by tight supplies. We haven't, obviously, the data for throughput, say, this week. But if you were to look at the previous week, there was 44,500 sheep killed. The majority of that was hoggets. There was about 5,500 ewes in that. But if you compare that to the corresponding week in 2023, it was just shy of 7,000 lower, despite prices being at that stage being 120 euro, say 20 cent a kilo up. And if you look where prices are now, they're up anywhere from 150 a kilo to 170 a kilo, and still it's not attracting out the numbers. So the big question is, are the numbers there? The 40,000, say, figure that Borbia had of extra sheep killed, we've talked about that, say, numerous times. The industry said they weren't going to be there. We doubted whether they'd be there. There's more, I suppose, maybe definitely more of a doubt around that now, that when you see prices where they are and numbers not coming, I'd say the numbers are in the system, Jack. Now, I know there will be lambs that will be killed later this year because they performed poorly last year and they're carried over. But at where prices are now, it's providing a significant incentive for people to feed on. So if they're not feeding on and say, slaughter lambs, it definitely questions in on what supplies are going to be like for the coming months.
Okay. Darren, I leave you on this in terms of the hill sheep piece, like that conference. We touched off it briefly a couple of weeks ago in terms of the hill sheep conference and some of the topics that were covered in that. One of the pieces was around liver fluke. And I suppose some of the lessons from the hill program or the sheep program or the EIP hill program that was there. Declan Byrne from Chagas was very involved in that SUAS program, wasn't he, Darren?
Yeah, and Declan gave a really good presentation. I've it on this week's sheep page, Jack, and we have a piece more to come. But he was just talking about, like, I suppose the lesson learned in this. We often look at commonages, and the biggest commonages issue in getting commonage, say farmers to work, is there might be legacy issues on families not getting on or farmers in it not getting on. And he said that the SUAS really brought that together because they didn't try and come in with any rules. So the biggest thing was the farmers were involved from the very beginning around what needed to change in the commonage, what needed to be improved, and they were driving it, as opposed to somebody coming in with policy and saying, this is what you need to do, and you need to do it by X date. And he said that was the key to, I suppose, the SUAS working so successfully. Obviously, there was a load more, say, options in what they tackled, and they had a lot of lessons. Like, for argument's sake, one of the other things that he looked at, and he said this is definitely a big consideration in hill areas, is they at the beginning maybe tried to tackle everything, and there were some areas up the hill where they just said towards the end, that's gone maybe too far from where we can, say, influence it now. Maybe leave it for another 20 years because heather will regenerate, go to a stage, and then it will naturally die away, or the same way with bracken, and to focus on the areas where you can bring about positive change. He was a bit, I don't know what way to phrase it. He was questionable around, say, the acres and the SUAS program or the Byrne program.
Frustrated.
More learnings not being adopted into acres, Jack. That he has a concern that if you give, I suppose, the menu of options that you have in acres, allow farmers to pick and choose what they want.
Yeah.
That's, you're sort of cherry picking what's maybe easy or what the higher
payments. You won't make the environmental progress, Darren, that you could potentially make.
Exactly. Yeah. And like he summarized in the end, and he said, look, there will be hard decisions that will have to be made. It mightn't be this acre scheme. It could be, say, the next scheme that comes. And he's hopeful that, say, there'll be learnings as well from acres that mightn't be perfect at the moment, but there will be some learnings from it, and that in the follow-on schemes that you could get to a point where you are starting to deliver real gains. And like he summed it up, he concluded that any of these schemes, they need to reward the farmer who's doing the work, and that's where the money needs to flow. And that if you do that, well, then it's very easy to incentivize farmers to do work.
Yeah. Okay, 100%. Darren, I know you're under pressure, you've good news for us. So we'll leave it on that. You've acres payments out, and your sheep price jumping 50 cents a kilo in the week. So listen, no better way to finish that for sheep farmers than what you've done. So excellent, 100%. Leave it at that, and we'll chat to you next week. Aidan, I didn't get talking to Darren or Adam on the weather side of things, like. But I'll say at the moment they're not as concerned as probably some of your guys in terms of, you know, trying to get out with large numbers to grass. It's tricky in terms of weather conditions and ground conditions, obviously, Aidan, isn't it?
Yeah, and like, to be fair, most of the last week hasn't been that bad, you know, particularly earlier in the week. There was, you know, Monday, Tuesday, and were good days, you know, and followed on from not a bad day on Sunday. So it's mixed, you know, but it's I suppose look at the forecast you mentioned at the start. Like, there's a good bit of rain coming for most places next week as well. So that's a problem, you know. So look, I mean, it is what it is. Like, we're here at the end of February, early March.
Yeah,
we're you know, it's, I suppose one thing I would say about the weather, Jack, and rainfall, you can't underestimate the power of extended daylight hours over the next few weeks. So even if it is wet, the impact that 10 mil of rain will have now versus 10 mil of rain 3 or 4 weeks ago is huge, like, because, you know, it's getting bright now at whatever, 6:30 or so in the morning. It's still bright, you know, 6:30, that's pushing towards 7 o'clock. Yeah, so and that's going to increase every day as we go on. And, you know, in March, you're going to get more drying weather. So things will change fast. So I'm saying to farmers, you know, don't be losing patience just yet. And those farmers panicking, you know, maybe going out looking for beet or whatever, as we heard the quickfire, you know, hold off. Look, and even if it is wet, you will still get opportunities now to get cows to grass, because we're that little bit later in the year. Yeah.
Now it is very farm specific, Aidan. And you talk about some of those the heavy soil farms, and like, you know, for a what they're going to be heavy. They're going to be heavy soils for another bit. You know, the kind of way they could be looking at a month or 6 weeks at least before they kind of get to the situation where you're talking about. Like,
yeah, absolutely, Jack. And I mean, look, it's very hard for someone on those heavy soils to be listening to me talking about getting cows to grass when they haven't the notion of, you know, they just haven't the ability to do it, and that's reality. That's, you know, and like we've all
you say ability, those farms, and they we just, know what they're like. Yeah, the farm can't take it. You know, the kind of way, rather than the person having the ability, like,
absolutely, the ground just can't take it. So, and it's you couldn't walk across some fields, Jack, yourself, and remind to ask cows to go out. So it would be bad for the farm. It would be bad for the cows if those animals did go out to grass, and that's just reality, you know.
Yeah.
Whereas a different story, Jack, on the free or draining limestone soils, of which, to be fair, most of the country, you know, most of the eastern part of the country, most of the south have those free or draining soils where a lot of the cows are. But equally, you know, there's a lot of cows in heavy land as well. So 30% of the farmed land in Ireland is considered, you know, imperfectly drained or, you know, heavier soils, and they're harder to work on. And there are a lot of cows on those soils as well, you know, whether it's in Cavan Monaghan or North Cork and Kerry. You know, there's plenty of cows on that land. And they're going to be in for the next while. So the priority then is to make sure they're fed as the best silage that they have, and 4 or 5 kilos of nuts, until they get out the grass, and then you can cut that back then as soon as the conditions allow.
But on a lot of those farms, Aidan, there is mixed ground conditions too on some of those farms. You know, the whole farm isn't always. And I mean, there are guys sneaking out with cows. You know, even if it's just by day, and it does help the job. It helps it for everyone, for the farmer and for the cows.
Yeah, and that's the difference, I suppose, between farmers who have a more open mindset, I'd say, towards grazing, even on those heavier farms. Because as you say, you know, there's usually variation within a farm. There's variation within a field, never mind within a farm. And they're walking the farm more regularly. They're saying to themselves, I'm not going to make the decision here while walking on concrete. I'm going to have to walk the farm to see can cows go out. And they're holding cows in the yard after milking, so they're not going straight back to the shed. They're giving themselves an opportunity to make the decision, and then deciding, okay, look, today is just not worth it. Okay, I might steal a couple of hours out of grass today, and we'll chance it and see how they get on. It's a small area. If they do damage, it's not going to be the end of the world. But it's those kind of decisions that need to be made. And it's getting serious now, Jack, because, you know, we are in the 1st of March. On some farms, there's 0% of the farm grazed. On many farms, there's 0% of the farm grazed. And, like, the longer that goes on, well, number one, the greater the cost is on the farm level, because there are more feed going in and more silage going in, more of that to be replaced next year, or next season. But you also have the cost in terms of lost output, because you've lower fat and protein percent, lower milk yield, lower body condition score, greater body condition score loss, because the quality of diet just isn't good enough. So there are, you know, huge costs to that. But at the same time, you can only play with the weather, the hand that you've been given in terms of the weather. So it's a tricky one.
But the other point you were making there earlier on, in terms of it is shoving on in the year now, you know, in terms of end of February, hitting into March. And Aidan, I'll say it has been... You look at it again, it's all specific, regional specific and location specific, but there seems to be grass out there on well-managed farms. You know, the temperatures haven't been cruel low for a long time, and there hasn't been real cold winds that have been kind of drying the place out and burning off what grass is there. You know, it's been, I don't know the stats, but, like, I mean, it's been a relatively soft type of a kind of a February piece, I'd say, like.
Yeah, in the main, Jack, you're right, like. I suppose one of the things to say on back to those farmers in heavier land, what they're telling me is that because the land has been wet for so long, I mean, we've had torrential rain really since September, October, growth rates just aren't as good on those wet waterlogged soils, whereas the kind of freer draining soils, it's been mild and they're actually growing quite well. You know, so you're talking growth rates 10 to 15 kilos per day in the last couple of weeks on those
that's
farms.
Big, like for February, like that's
it
big
is,
for February,
yeah, you know? It is. Yeah. Look, it was harsh earlier this week, but it was very mild. I felt up to that. You know, we're getting good temperatures there. Like you'd be under pressure going around with a heavy coat on you, like working. So you know, it was mild, like, but and it's supposed to get it, okay. It's harsh these days, but it's going to get mild again. I think looking at the forecast, there's more rain coming anyway. That usually indicates a bit of softness with it. Yeah. So I'd say growth rates will start taking off then again. You know, you're heading into the mid to low teens, and then sure, as March progresses, you should be heading up to 30 kilos a day, I suppose, within the March, and you know, heading for April then.
Yeah, I see that piece there on fertilizer in terms of some of the trade are saying that there's not as much fertilizer moved, and there could be a challenge in terms of getting fertilizer out in farms. Like, so, I mean, there's probably a couple of things going on there, Aidan. Like, there's farmers have some fertilizer from last year or whatever, and they're spreading that. There's some cutting back on the early application, and I'd say there's a bundle of farmers kind of waiting for the price to fall another bit, to be honest with you, before they go with a merchant to try and buy some. There's a mixed bag, but there's probably less bagged fertilizer spread at this time compared to other years.
Yeah, and there's probably a fourth category there, Jack, of those that don't have the money to buy it just yet. You know, so cash flow is tight on many farms, so they're probably holding off as long as they can, you know, maintaining as much credit as they can, I suppose, in before they load more stuff onto it. But definitely an awful lot less fertilizer spread this year compared to, we say, go back 2 or 3 years ago when we would have had, you know, way more farmers with fertilizer spread, you know, despite the weather, or you know, even with the weather that we've had. So I suppose, look, that's, you know, you could say there's good and bad there, because people are taking more cognizance of the environment and ground conditions before they're going spreading. They're looking for a better response at nitrogen, and the response to early nitrogen is lower than it is in March or April. That's a fact. But I would also say on the flip side is that what grass that early nitrogen grows is hugely valuable. And it's beneficial to have that grass in the farm, provided you can get out to graze it, obviously. But if you're on those heavier soil types and you don't have the ability to graze it, there's no point in spreading the nitrogen, because it's a waste of money in that case, and there's more risk of it losing, of being lost. So, no, I mean, it's case specific again. I hear what the trade are saying, and I think they're genuine in what they're saying on it, like, you know, because there is, we've said in the show before, there's a shortage of skilled workers to drive lorries and deliver, you know, drive forklifts and deliver fertilizer out to farms. So if everyone orders it at the one go, there could be a potential delay in getting it out to you. So for me, if you can afford to buy it and or you have the credit from the merchant, I would be ordering it now, having it in the yard. At least then you're ready to go when you need it. And you're not reliant on deliveries.
I mean, the other point you make in around cash flow piece is obviously very relevant in terms of, we've had a couple of, like, the majority of spring milk producers had a couple of months there where there was no check coming in, and really they're only ramping up supplies now towards the end of February in terms of deliveries, you know, in terms of real deliveries now into 2024. So they're just really starting to make money again, and they won't be paid for that for another bit, you know. So Aidan, you've a piece there in terms of milk prices, looking at January prices and looking ahead into kind of February prices, and maybe looking at kind of what's happening across Europe and other parts of the world. I mean, it is positive. My quick summary is it's positive, but what we're dealing with are still only kind of pretty break-even prices, milk prices, in an Irish scenario, given input prices where they are, where costs are at farm level.
Yeah, absolutely, Jack. If you take all of 2023, you could say it was a more or less a break-even year, because when you take into account the tax farmers had to pay, the debt repayments, and their own labour, their own drawings, I mean, there was very little left over in terms of available for reinvestment or cash flow purchases or cash flow purposes or whatever you want. So, the cash was tight last year, and it's the same now. You know, it's following through. The milk price we're getting today wouldn't cover the full economic costs of farms, that's for sure, because the amount of feed going in, the amount of silage going in, and the level of production. So we are reliant on prices really increasing in line with milk sales increasing. So there's a double benefit to come. And you'd say it's in the post, looking at what's happening in terms of European prices, where we saw butter had a right spike this week. It went up by 365 a ton, Jack. It was one of the biggest increases in a long, long time, I suppose, since 2021, 2022. It's still not to where it was, obviously, but you know, you're talking about it's almost 6,000 a ton now for butter. Like, I mean, that's a huge price. A bit more volatility in terms of the powder markets, and we're seeing that in the GDT as well. Powders were were fluctuating in the last couple of weeks, and that's a big bearing on the GDT, but GDT because sure, whole milk powder is a huge part of it. So it's described as a little bit like, you know, there's uncertainty there. There's lack. The markets are lacking a little bit of direction, but they're still good, and the trend is positive. So, for me, you know, you'd be confident that yes, the predictions that we're seeing for milk price in the low 40s heading into the peak months should remain. You know, I think they're on track to be delivered. It was looking edgy there after Christmas, but it seems to be more back in track now than where they were. And I suppose, look, the GDT has been very strong. Okay, it only increased by 0.5% last time, but it was up, you know, significantly the auction before. I think it was 4.5% or something. So
it's no bonanza, Aidan, like in terms of a price, especially, you know, as you say, we're going to go through the peak months now in March, April, May, in those kind of numbers in terms of between 40 and 45 in terms of a base price. Like, given the cost piece at farm level, you know, it's you know, and like putting a value on the work involved. You know, I mean, it's you know, it's not much.
We're talking about costs coming down, you know, and feed and fertilizer costs coming down, which that's at most like 25% of the overall cost of the feed and fertilizer. Every other cost is more or less staying the same, if not increasing, because you know the man fixing the milk machine probably hasn't got a pay rise for a few years. He took one last year, and that's he's not going to come down, you know. So there's and multiply that out across every service provider within the place, particularly those that are servicing, I suppose, general industry as well, and not just reliant on dairy farmers. All those costs have gone up. I mean, going to the co-op to buy a bag of anything a bag of nuts, you know, it's very expensive. Nuts and bolts, I mean, it's very expensive. Like, so all those things have gone up in cost, and they're not going to come down anytime soon. So, you know, the cost of repairs and maintenance is going to be high. AI costs is another thing, Jack, and we're going to look at the next few weeks with the spring AI focus coming up. You know, sex semen is now an ingrained cost, both in terms of the actual cost of buying the straw, but also the impact it has on calving rate, and same with the number of beef bulls being born. There's longer gestation lengths. I'm hearing farmers giving out that they normally have 70% of the cows calved at this stage. They're looking to have over 50%. In some farms, you know, because sex semen didn't go as well or whatever, it wasn't used as you know as maybe it should have been, or mistakes were made, or some other error took place where they had a bit of a poorer performance than they wanted, and that's going to happen. We're going to get that, you know, it's going to be part and parcel now of farming, and I'm not saying that's wrong, but it's a cost that's built into the system that we wouldn't have had 3 or 4 years ago.
Right, so you're not backing away from sex semen, I hear, but you're saying that, listen, you need to adjust your finances and your calving rates. You know, you need to accept that you're not going to be where you were with conventional semen.
Yeah, I think we have to accept that. Like, you can't say that that the industry is going to move towards sex semen and more dairy beef and say there's no impact on calving dates or conception rates or gestation age. Like, there is, like, and I mean we and that's just one element of it, but. You know, the back to the milk price scenario is that we really need to be seeing prices more like 2022 than currently in order to be back to the level of profitability that we would have been at previously, because our cost base has increased by 20-30% compared to where it was pre-2022, I suppose 2023, before the war in Ukraine. So we're back to that situation now where we're actually in low margin years, even though milk price is high and rising, it's still a low margin year. And for a lot of farmers, they're only realizing that now, Jack, and hence they're seeing cash flow difficulties, because some people were spending money, you know, more freely maybe than they would have been normally. Like, and it for a lot of new entrants and a lot of farmers milking for the last 10 years, this is the first real pinch that they're seeing in terms of a prolonged period of low margin. So it's definitely resetting the balance. And I suppose added to that, then there's a lot of doom and gloom around nitrates, and I suppose it's feeding into a negativity within the sector that's. You know, not all of it is justified, because you know it's a great sector to be in.
Yeah,
you're guaranteed your income. You're the only investment you have to make in marketing is your bulk tank, like, and you compare that to any other sector. You know, where you're going out looking to make sales, you don't have to do that. Like, all we need to do is get milk in the bulk tank and have as best quality we can, and keep our costs as low as we can, and try and enjoy it while we're doing it.
Yeah. But that pressure cooker feeling is there with the nitrates piece and the uncertainty around it, Aidan, that we've talked about before in terms of whether, you know, where the thing is going in the future. But
I see, but, you know, there's a bit more focus coming on it too, Jack. Like a bit more I see our customer in the Oireachtas during the week as well. Yeah. And you know, all those things are a big help, like, and we need industry and those people working together to keep the pressure on. And it's good to see that that the Agricultural Committee is inviting those people in to speak. So look, I mean, the more that goes on and the more that happens, I think the better we have of convincing the politicians of the importance of retaining the derogation.
And the understanding of it, 100%. Last one, Aidan, the calf tagging job, like we touched off it last week. Any particular updates, or has it improved? Or
it probably has this improved, Jack, in terms of the delay. So I think it's 13.3 days now is the latest update from ICBF. So they're originally hoping for 12. So it is longer than that, but now we're in the peak period. So, you know, if it's ever going to be delayed, it's going to be now. I suppose the changes that they've made, they must have been beneficial, Jack, because I hear less people giving out about it anyway. So if the sample is in the lab for longer than 10 days, the card issues automatically, which is a good thing. If the sample is blank or they can't detect the sample for the DNA test, the card will issue automatically as well. So if you're doing a retest, at least you're going to get the card back for that calf. Now, you still have to sample the calf. You know, you can't sell it until
And the cost of that.
But at least you have the card back anyway, and it can be taken away then. So a couple of positives there, for sure.
Yeah, okay. 100%. Aidan, we'll leave you go. Thanks a million for that. And chat to you next week. Right, folks, that's it for another week. Thanks to Grassland Agro once again for helping us make the show happen. Thanks to you for watching and thanks for listening. Thanks to our contributors, Adam, Darren and Aidan. Thanks again for the questions. Any more questions, WhatsApp 0868366465. Remember, you can listen back to any of the recent webinars or podcasts on ifj.ie/podcast. We'll be back again next week. Until then, stay safe and stay farming.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.